text is from the book of Romans. And who will separate us from the love of Christ? Will tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Nay, we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. But we usually skip the line that I just skipped, where it is written, for your sake we are being killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep to be slaughtered. When I open the Bible to the book of Psalms, I never cease to be astonished at both the depth and the breadth of human emotion. Nothing, as our children were just told, nothing is left out. From the praise and thanksgiving of a congregation employing lute, harp, trumpet, and cymbal, to the anguished cries of an individual sinking in the mire, being washed away by a tsunami with no one to help. The Psalms tutor us in the agonizing, searching, soaring conversation that is called prayer. I've told many of you this experience, but when I was out on the West Coast many, many years ago, visiting my parents, the phone rang at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was my colleague calling to tell me that a dear friend of ours had been assassinated. He had been the president of American University in Beirut. And it being 3 a.m. in the morning at my parents' house, and it being at my parents' house, there was no Bible in sight. So what I had were the Psalms that were written on my heart. And I found in the middle of the night, as I turned the radio on to begin to hear the news of Malcolm's death, that I would begin to recite to myself, God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. They were the same Psalms I recited to myself in the night after 9/11. They are the Psalms I know so many of you recite to yourselves in extremis. And so it is in this season of Lent, we together turn to the book of Psalms, that more and more, day by day, these words might be written upon our hearts. This morning we turn to a psalm about which we know very little contextually, save that the words were the words of national lament to God, spoken at some time in history when God's people together were in extremis. As I read these words today, and in the context of a world unraveling before a tragedy whose magnitude escapes human imagination, Miguel Unamuno's prescient observation for our world in extremis comes to mind once again. I'm convinced, he writes, that we should solve many things if we went out into the streets and uncovered our griefs, which perhaps would prove to be one sole common grief, and join together in weeping them and crying aloud to the heavens and calling upon God. And even this, though God should not hear us, but God would hear us. The chiefest sanctity of a temple is that it is a place to which mortals go to weep in common. A miserere sung in common by a multitude tormented by destiny. It is not enough to cure the plague. We must learn to weep for it. Yes, we must learn to weep. I know no better definition for the Psalms of communal lament. I think of the psalmist who wrote the 44th. And he implies from the beginning that we learn to weep heroic epic would extol, which formed the subject matter of the hymn and public worship. They're completely overshadowed by the acts of God, who, emerging from the background of history, makes himself known to the eyes of faith as the one who really shapes the course of events and lets the congregation share in them. Yet paradoxically, it is their knowledge of God that becomes the problem on which the whole psalm hinges. Because they have known God's presence with them in the past, now they know God's absence, God's hiddenness, God's abandonment in the present. Whereas before, their armies had gotten victory through their trust and faithfulness toward God alone. Now their weapons are impotent against the enemy, and God appears to be against them. Relentlessly, the congregation shouts its complaint to God. You have rejected us and abased us, have not gone out with our armies, made us turn back from our foes, have made us like sheep for the slaughter, and scattered us among the nations, have sold our people for a trifle, have made us the taunt of neighbors, the derision and scorn of those around us, a laughing stock among the peoples. We know these complaints. They echo down the corridors of history. As nations rise and fall, as religions flourish and decline, as peoples succumb to plagues, and as whole villages are sucked into the sea. They are the complaints of people whose only comfort in life and in death was once that they belonged to a God who watched over them in such a way that not a hair from their head could fall without the will of their Father in heaven. In a sense, that is the faith we just promised to teach Hudson. It is the faith in the God who heals all your diseases that we taught Hudson and that we are teaching our children right now over in the Strauss Building. It is a faith to hold on to, and yet it is ironically in the midst of that faith we hold on to, that faith who says God is a God who heals all your diseases, that we reach for in the face of one whom we love, who is dying of disease that apparently God is not healing. Because if we did not have this faith, if we did not know of this God, if we had not been taught from of old the saving acts of God in history, why would we expect life to be other than one damn thing after another? Moreover, to whom would we complain if there were no master of the universe to hear? The words are directed against a God who was once touted in childhood as a friend and now seems to have become an enemy. No complaint in human history embodies the words of the 44th Psalm more truly than the complaint of God's people in the death camps. To wit, consider the Midrash written in the winter of 1944 on the 44th Psalm. You desert and shame us as they cut our beards and mass rape our women. You do not go out with our armies, with our resistance. You put us to flight from our enemies in mass exodus and transports. Those who hate us tear us to pieces at will, using our skins for lampshades and our flesh for soap. You hand us over like sheep to be devoured in the gas chambers, crematoria, and mass burning pits. An object of head shaking among the people in disbelief that something like this is happening to anyone, much less to us, your chosen people. not so the 44th Psalm. In fact, the heart of the psalm seems to call God's bluff on a simple tit-for-tat execution of the covenant. If we had forgotten the name of our God, or spread out our hands to a strange God, do you think God would not know this? God knows the secrets of the human heart, and therefore knows that because of God, we are being killed all day long and accounted as sheep for the slaughter. As the community noted earlier in the psalm, in God we have trusted continually, and we will give thanks to your name forever. Come on. When I think of the destructive religious instincts that would have us blame the victims for the tragedy that has befallen them, be it the triple tragedy of an earthquake, a tsunami, and a near nuclear disaster, or an epidemic such as AIDS, or genocide, or 9/11, I practically want to shout, if I had a voice, when I come upon the psalmist's insistence that the community has been faithful, has kept the covenant from the days of their childhood. Yet in these verses, there is no attempt to whitewash God for the unconscionable anguish of innocent human beings. Rather, as we said from the start, this is a real conversation, a real argument, a complaint that waits for an accounting from God, the God who must rouse himself and draw near enough to hear. Beginning with the book of Job, first heard at our father's feet, on our mother's lap, in the hold of the community of faith. That love of God, concludes Zweisser, is the hidden pivot of the whole song. It's true that in the song, the love of God appeared to the eyes of the people at that time to be obscured by a veil because of the mystery of suffering. A veil that through the suffering of Christ drops from the face of God to the end that nothing might separate us, neither life nor death, nor angels nor principalities nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height nor depth, nor any other creature shall separate us from being slaughtered all the day long.